I'm Dr. Amalia Gonyas Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates women's milestone achievements in their struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, and much more. Joining us today is Professor Priscilla Baker from the Department of Chemistry and the Faculty of Natural Sciences at the University of the Western Cape. She holds the Saatchi Chair for Analytical Systems and Processes, Priority, and Emerging Contaminants. She also serves as the Director of Nano Micro Manufacturing Facility, Sensors Node. She is the Co-Director of Synergy Lab International Associated Laboratory, and she is also Co-Director of Sensor Lab Research Group at the University of the Western Cape. And to add another feather into her cap, this year she was awarded the 2025 L'Oréal UNESCO Laureate for Africa and the Arab States. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Amalia. That was such a kind introduction. It's my great pleasure to be here and have this conversation with you.
Prof. Baker, to open the show, I want to start with one of your quotes. Nobody gives you opportunities. They present themselves to you. And it's up to you to see them and to seize them. No matter what other people may say, you can achieve what you believe. I think that's fantastic.
That's such an interesting quote, Amalia, because I think it was coined in 2014. So 2014, I was awarded the South African Women in Science Award, also co-funded by L'Oréal. And back then, so, you know, almost 10 years ago, I was 10 years younger. I have to say this to everyone listening. 10 years in your career is a different 10 years to just the, you know, biological age. At 10 years younger, I was still learning about leadership, for example. I was still learning to embrace strategic thinking in its full capacity, which if I look back now, those are my strengths. But back then it wasn't. And so when I was saying that, it was still at a time when I was looking at opportunities and considering, you know, why am I not getting, who's sitting on the board? What is going wrong? And you have to realize at some point that there will always be those who root for you, those who are in your corner, but others who for their own ambitions or own agendas may not be supporting what you know could be good for you. And that's really where you have to dig in deep and ask yourself, what am I doing and why am I doing this? Where am I going with these, you know, applications, this grant, my career, what I'm putting in, the amount of effort, my publications? It all takes a lot of hard work. And so when we grab those opportunities and we really put in the hard work, that's when nobody can take it away from us, because now we've won on our own terms. But when we wait for someone, oh, it's a special issue, come and publish with us, that happens once, you know, every few years. But there's nothing wrong in saying, I am the doctor, or I am the scholar, I have a mind to analyze, to critically evaluate, and make a contribution, and push that agenda, even if it's at a small scale, even if it's just for yourself, you will know the right time to take it bigger, to go to the next level. So yes, it sounds a little bit very, you know, like the rebel in me, but I think at that time, there was still a rebel in me saying that not every opportunity is handed to you on a silver platter. Not every opportunity is a call for an award and you are successful. Some opportunities are signing up the PhD student who doesn't look like they're going to stay the course, and then intentionally deciding to walk the road with that student and making sure that they have everything in place for their success. Because in the end, when they are successful, that's what builds your ladder to success as well. So it's a little bit of ancient wisdom now for me, but at the time, I think it was where I was at, really believing that not every opportunity falls into your lap or is as clear as we may want it to be. Some you really have to just keep walking, working behind the scenes, and then it manifests at the right time.
I really appreciate you unpacking the statement and this view of setting your own agenda and leveraging the opportunities that come your way, or creating those opportunities. And thinking about the way that you've created and navigated your career, you hold a PhD in analytical analytical chemistry and have really excelled in this field. But looking at your CV, if you go back to the early days of your academic career, you actually started in oceanography. Tell us about some of the reasons for the pivot, and also, in a way, giving permission to yourself for changing careers and not being fixed.
Yeah. Thank you, Amalia. So it's a little bit of that, but it touches on my rebel spirit at the time. So I matriculated in 85 and 86, 1985, 1986. I do apologize for the abbreviation there. But if you think back, those were the years of apartheid protests in South Africa, and particularly in the school sectors. There was boycotts, classes were, dismissed and abandoned for long periods of time. So when I finished in matric, it was after years of that sort of engagement at high school. A lot of the focus had shifted from education to the struggle. And my engagement with my friends and colleagues at the time in high school was really this debate of what is the right thing to do? Should we be pushing the political agenda, for example, like Nelson Mandela was doing, for liberation of the nation? But if we liberate the nation, where are our people to fill the gaps and the spaces that we are fighting for? Will we have a South Africa that is free, but is positioned on a paper platform and collapse because we don't have the skills? So those were the debates of the day. And at the time, I had applied to UCT for admission. And I may add, my grades weren't exceptional. I wasn't an A student. I was a C average, but I got into UCT under this climate of change. So I started my BSc with chemistry, with physics and mathematics, calculus, and I did some statistics, biochemistry up to the second year level. So now I said it's in the spirit of being a rebel. Then they introduced a new program with physics and mathematics as a requirement called physical oceanography. It was meteorology and physical oceanography. So in my third year, I deviated from chemistry. It wasn't a complete change, but I did a little bit of a pivot and I focused on physical chemistry, mathematics, expressed in this domain of the environment. And we did two courses in atmospheric science was the one, and then physical oceanography. And this was, unbeknown to me, basically the foundation of my science career today. Because in that space, I was now the first woman, the first Black woman for everything. Okay, so that's another matter. But I got into the space of environmental measurement. During my undergraduate years, I also worked part-time for the Medical Research Council. So also got introduced to environmental epidemiology, working with Professor Yasmin von Schoending at the time. And Professor Derek Yap was her husband. He worked on the removal of lead from the anti-smoking campaigns, and also to the removal from lead from many, many things, from fuel, from paints and things like that, because of its negative impacts on health. So there was a lot of input into my thinking as a scientist, even though it didn't come from my strict science training. And that I'm grateful for, because I think I liked that. It connected with me on a space that said, chemistry is not just the textbook. It's maths is not just for the classroom. It's just the platform on which you can serve the whole world. And that was really captivating. It gave me an opportunity to go on boats and explore water as sampling, as the environment. When the wind blows, where do you measure? Because things are changing. And so it shapes your mind also later on for chemistry. And I'm very, very happy that I did that. I then graduated with my bachelor's degree, didn't go to honors because honors required us to go on one of the research vessels for projects at the time. That's the way the program was structured. And the ships were not ready to accommodate women, let alone Black women. And it was practical reasons, more so from our apartheid legacy, but practical. So they were in bathrooms or ablutions separate. And at that time, we didn't share bathrooms yet. So it was a time when if they couldn't accommodate you, that was actually a legitimate reason to say no. And there weren't many people fighting for that at the time. So that's when I then returned to chemistry because I had second year already completed at that stage. And I then completed almost like a double major, but part-time. So I finished my chemistry major and from there went into analytical chemistry as an applied subject at the Technikon, because you will now understand also as a senior student, you don't have the luxury of just enrolling and doing nothing. So I had a family soon after that. So I had to work. So I was working at the Technikon, studying and finishing my third year in chemistry, which then gave me entry to the honors program. And then that was the start of my postgraduate career. So yes, I think many of us, when we first consider which direction to study, it's not so clear. And I take it from my own experience with my kids. I didn't know what to tell them. Much as I was their mom and I could see that they were brilliant at this or not so good, let's just admit that, at some other things. My advice to them and to every other parent, because now parents also look up to me as a teacher, what should we tell our children? And I said, you have to look at where your child is at. What are their strengths? What is their personality like? What are they good at it at school? Because we go to school and we all endorse the school system. So we have to use that as the basis of our decision making. And I said, for the subjects where they are doing well, encourage them to strengthen that. So if they're doing maths and science, let's go into a maths and science career. And as you grow, because this was my experience, after first year, after second year, you have the foundation. Now you can start saying, oh, but I want to go into applied mathematics, or I want to do computer science. And maybe it'll take a bit longer at the third and fourth year. But if you get that wrong at the first and second year, you won't qualify to get into the third year that you want. And the way that our education system is structured is to provide basic education in defined fields from which to make decisions, not to come in saying, I want to be an environmental lawyer. You're first going to be a lawyer, and then you're going to specialize in environmental law because law fundamentally is what you need to know.
Leapfrogging from those early days to where you are now, you wear a number of hats: co-director of SensorLab Research Group, co-director of Senergy Lab International Associated Laboratory, director of Nanomicro Manufacturing Facility, Dusachi Chair, on top of your day job. So I want to ask you, how do you create capacity to take on all of these responsibilities?
That is, I'm going to try and link all of these acronyms. You've mentioned them now, so I feel comfortable just using the acronyms. By saying that, first of all, with a PhD, we had some discussion on the value of PhDs, but the PhD is to establish an area of excellence. Find a focus and become an expert at something. Know it really well. And for me, that was analytical chemistry. Now, a lot of people say, oh, analytical chemistry is the easy one. Every other chemist can do it. Not the way I do it. I do apologize. I beg to differ. When you do analytical chemistry, mathematics, physical chemistry, whatever your discipline is, when you do it properly, when you apply yourself, you know the theory, you know the practice, you know the problems, you know the advantages and the disadvantages. And by being very, very particular in how you apply yourself at that level, it positions you to compete for everything else that comes. So, for example, the Saatchi chair is in analytical systems and processes for emerging contaminants. Analytical systems is different to analytical processes. Both of them relate to emerging contaminants, which is the new aspect. But if you didn't know analytical systems as separate from analytical processes, you won't be able to make the connection. And that was really what distinguished the proposal to be awarded the Saatchi chair. It's the application of the knowledge the practice, but also understanding the context of analytical chemistry as we experience it in our legislative systems, in our processes for manufacturing, for health, for well-being, etc., monitoring and so on. So I've had a number of grants in that space that taps into the broader knowledge of what analytical chemistry can do and what it represents. I am the co-leader of Sensor Lab, which is an investment from another senior professor at our university, who is also the Saatchi Chair, based on a long-term strategy to create at UWC a basis for training. Now, this speaks to the deficit in Africa for laboratories that are properly equipped for analytical chemistry. So we cannot create funds to buy HPLCs, mass specs, NMRs, all of the chromatograph, all of these things that we need for analytical chemistry. It would be too expensive for us as individuals to build capacity at every university, but we can create a platform at our university which is free and open for students from the African diaspora to access by collaboration. So we assist students from all over Africa. We've done this for the past 20 years, assist them to find bursaries just to come. Once they are here, we help them to find accommodation in our residences. Our equipment and our knowledge we share for free. Because in academia, you will understand, we collaborate, we co-author, we co-supervise. So we use those models to benefit us, if you like, but we don't charge a bench fee. We don't charge for the knowledge that we, disseminate.
That's such a generous initiative.
I think the visionary aspect of it, I can again accredit to my colleague who in years, so we also look at, contingency for follow-up. So he's the more senior colleague. I'm moving into that space. And so I've grown and learned that from those who've gone before me. We don't become fantastic in whatever we may think we are fantastic just by precipitating out of nowhere. So we have to be able to learn. We have to be willing to learn from those who've gone before us. But the vision was for students who don't have to have a place to come and live out their dream for science, not to have to say, I can't do HPLC because I don't have. You can apply for the grant. That's hard work. Finding the grant, number one, is hard work. Two, finding the time to separate from your family or your teaching commitments is also hard work. So if you put in that investment, we are ready to receive you, to train you, to share what we have with you at no cost, because we've done the work to cover that cost, to bring the instruments at a platform that we can manage. So that is a visionary which I am part of. That's why I'm the co-leader. Moving very quickly, some of the other partnerships are at the latter part of my career, where internationalization of what we do is very important. So for the longest time before computers, so if we just go back 10 years, not more than that, Sub-Saharan Africa was completely cut off from the rest of the world in terms of technology, in terms of sharing so many things. It was just too expensive. We were just too far. Today, it's a different story. We can have this conversation in real time. We can do the same across continents. So the Senergy Lab platform comes from my part, another investment of over almost 15 years now. I started in 2011 with just a researcher to researcher connect. We decided to collaborate. I've been on the program for recognition of excellence. I've been an associate professor with them. I currently am an associate professor with the University of Serge-Pontoise in France. And through this partnership, we developed a specific investment from our university and their government to fund PhD by Côte d'État. Côte d'État means they are registered in France and they do half of their degree there. Then they have to come to a partner university, and we are that partner university, and they do the other half of their degree with us. So, of course, you can imagine for every PhD, we have to decide what are our skills that are complementary that we can package for the student. The student then has to spend physical time in the two countries, and we follow the graduation procedures of our respective countries so that we comply. But in the end, they have one degree by agreement, completed at two different institutions. And this is such a transformative experience at PhD level when you've never been out of your country both ways. So it's a cultural enrichment, it's the knowledge sharing, it's the growth experience as a young person having to fend for yourself. And lastly, it's the language because we have French and English. But it's amazing how all our students, both sides, how they cope and how this enriches their ability to express themselves on science in public forums. So it's really a very, very excellent growth opportunity. The very last one is where I'm at currently in my career. The nano micro manufacturing facility is an investment from our Department of Science and Technology and Innovation to promote technology transfer. So all of the experience and the skills and the infrastructure, the partnerships that I've mentioned in the previous connections just now, comes to its fulfillment in the NMMF, where we now say we can make sensors, we understand how it works, we understand where it should be applied, and we can now make them in portable formats so that people can wear them as a patch, as a wristband, printed onto t-shirts. That's the space that we are working. So we're straddling a little bit of electronics in the context of electrochemistry, and we have international partners that help us because that's the most efficient way to deal with it. We unpacked earlier the economy where we're at in terms of innovation. It'll be very hard to do it only in South Africa. So we need respected collaborators and partners who are not doing it for the money, but for the power of innovation, for transforming knowledge. And so no matter what label you look at in the context of, let's say, my professional persona, it all comes back to a firm grounding in analytical chemistry and the power that analytical chemistry has to serve people in various capacities, be that for information, for advice, for guidance, or for practical implementation and devices. And so it's a very exciting time for us. We lead by hosting workshops, bringing people again, perpetuating this idea of Sensor Lab, bringing people to UWC, where we have the laboratory, where we have the equipment and the skills to teach both the concept of technology transfer and the practice. Last year in our workshop, everyone who attended left with a t-shirt onto which they had printed a sensor. So if they understand the sensor and they understand the function of the t-shirt, because that's a whole thing to unpack, then they now go away empowered to believe and to practice that they can transfer their research to an interface that is useful for people in real time. And that's what the t-shirt represents. So there are lots of challenges to unpack, but again, we're academics, philosophers. Our superpower is training and capacity development. So that's where we focus our energy.
You lead an incredibly exciting career and space. No 2 days must ever be the same.
Absolutely.
I wanted to ask you, what advice would you offer to young women or girls who are interested in pursuing careers of science? Because the reality is that women are still underrepresented.
I think, I had this conversation with our South African Chemical Institute in South Africa. I've been the chairperson of the Electrochemistry Society within that context for more than 10 years because we were building something. Once we had established, we started handing it over, and we now more regularly have exchange of leaderships. But initially, everything that needs to succeed needs a champion. So if you're not prepared to invest, if you're just touching it and it's not working and letting go, not only are you disappointing yourself, but you're disappointing everyone who comes and wants to follow in your footsteps or who thinks you're wonderful. You're disappointing them because you're not leaving them anything to build on. So my advice to women in particular is follow your passion first. Understand what that is. And it changes for us. May I say, we have the liberty to feel differently about things at different times of our lives. Sometimes children are our priority. Well, then make it your top priority and do your best. But children don't stay with us forever. And develop the ability to see beyond 5 years. Don't regret the time that you spend with your young babies because you want to be the professor. Be working at it and be the good mommy. It's possible, you know, and then set yourself those goals where you want to go to. It's a very good exercise to reflect. Once a year, we call it New Year's resolutions. I believe it's best done middle of the year when we are very sober and typically, you know, don't have the lure of a 13th check or someone give blessing us at Christmas time or some other inflated happiness. But at a time in your life, regularly, we need to assess where we are at and where we want to go and look at our resources, our strengths, our weaknesses, we call it our opportunities and our threats, the SWOT analysis. Don't dismiss it, but employ it meaningfully. And that doesn't mean we have all the answers for every next step. Sometimes we also have to just trust that what we have done will reap. You know, will produce the investment. I am a firm believer in what you sow, you will reap. So if you're sowing hard work, if you're sowing diligence, if you're sowing dedication, you're going to reap the positive outcome of that. And it may surprise you what the positive outcome looks like, because we may think it's money, a house, and a husband, and it may not look like that, but it will be a good space for what you've invested. So be careful how you spend your time when you're young. Don't chase the dream too fast. A solid dream takes time to mature. And anything, it's a cliche, but it's true. Anything worth having is worth working hard for. So if you say you want to be a scientist, decide whether you want to be a scam scientist, whether you want to be a scientist of integrity. Whether you want to be a scientist that has an impact on the people that matter to you first, and then in your greater context, and then in the world, and chase that. You have a lifetime, be it 5 years or 500 years. You have all of the time that has been allocated to you to chase the dream. And may I say, it's in working and chasing that dream with energy that the joy lies. Because you're always sure of what you're working for. You don't know what it looks like, but you are confident that your faith will not disappoint you.
What I'm hearing is it's about the journey as
Yes.
much as the
Yeah.
outcome that comes
Yes.
into this mix.
So in one of the interviews, I think I had an opportunity to phrase it very poetically, and I'm going to probably misquote, but it is something to the tune of, it's not the awards that we chase, but it's the rewards along the way, the smaller wins that builds that platform for the big award. So even when the big award comes, it's not what you are living for. You are living every step of the way. You're living the journey. And that is really the satisfaction. It's why we drink coffee. It's why we toast champagne, not on the big event.
But let's not lose sight of the big event, because this
Yes.
year you did receive the big event with the 2025 L'Oréal UNESCO Award for Africa and Arab Emirates. And it's not like these awards are issued every year, it happens every second year. And they're highly competitive. You were
Yes.
competing with, I think, 500 other nominees.
Yes.
Very briefly, tell us what this experience means to you.
Yes, thank you very much. Yes, it is an amazing honor, first of all, when we look at the quality of the nominees, when we look at the number, the quantity of the nominees, and then lastly, when I had the opportunity and the privilege to meet the jury. It's an incredibly humbling experience to understand that all of these people have evaluated you and found you deserving. And for me, that is. It's humbling. It's an affirmation of all the little steps in between. It doesn't overshadow the journey, but it makes the journey even the more rewarding and sweeter in the end. And I think the lure or the knowledge that such an award is in the waiting is part of the energy that keeps you motivated every year. I mean, I didn't think 10 years ago that I was going to apply for that. But at the right time, you look at your career and you think this could be of benefit for so many more people. To keep it at UWC would be wrong. To keep it within South Africa would be wrong. Let me pitch to the international arena. Let what I have be it skills, be it knowledge, be it my unique personality, who knows? Let that be of benefit for someone else. And maybe that someone else is not where you're at. And that motivates me to go for the big ones, not because of the big ones, but because of what that big opportunity can allow you to achieve through others and for others, really. So it's this whole idea of service. When we are little, we are taught just do your homework. We don't ask questions later on in the work. Well, we don't feel like keep doing your homework because it's in the homework that the blessings come. It's in the homework that the benefits come, not just for you, but for everyone else. And therein lies the real joy. None of us wants to celebrate by ourselves. It's no fun winning an award and drinking champagne in your room. It is so much fun being on the stage and having everyone in your family, in your community, in your university, ready to raise a glass of champagne with you because they know the journey. They know the walk that you have walked. And when they see the trophy, it represents all of that. So it's not just the moment that the world sees, but through that moment, you can now allow others to see the journey as well. So it's really, it's so much bigger than who we are. And for me, it's because of the bigger plan for creation. We were never created just for Bellville, South Africa. We were always created to impact the lives of others. And where the others may be is different for each one. So where you are, shine. Don't hide your light, under a bucket. Shine. And sooner or later, the intended audience will see your light because our lives are not orchestrated by ourselves alone. We are in the hands of a greater being who sees beyond where we can see. And it's that fulfillment of purpose that I believe we should all strive towards. It's what powers me. It's what gives me goosebumps right now as I'm speaking to you. Because I don't know how many days I have, but every day that I live is going to be exciting because I know there is a greater purpose. I know there is a higher calling. And until I fulfill that calling, I will not be removed. It's not my decision.
So purpose is a very clear part of your success story because it's that true north. What would you say have been some of the other factors that have helped you stay the course and succeed in what you do?
So I have to acknowledge from the beginning my family home. So I was born into, and by saying those words, I immediately recognize the advantage. So I was born into a family home with loving parents and healthy sibling rivalry. All brothers, but we fought cats and like cats and dogs, but it was healthy. Not everyone has that starting point, but it doesn't have to end there. Then in my schooling and in my university careers, I had the good teachers and the not so good ones. But you follow where your heart leads. You know who are the people that connect with your values, who are the people that have expressed kindness to you, who are the people who are willing to help you for your success, not just for their own gain. And throughout university, that becomes a little bit more difficult because when we all have PhDs, we become natural competitors. So it's natural to compete, to look after your own interests. It's important to develop that skill as well, but never to lose touch with the people around you. Because if your success is not grounded in kindness, in humanity, in connection with others, in service, then it's a hollow success. So I've had excellent mentors in my, I spoke about my early years in undergraduate at UCT. For my master's and my PhD, I had excellent supervision by Professor Andrew Crouch, who's currently the VC of Sir Blaikie University. I think soon to retire, but still the VC. So I've had good people, not just him, his whole family. His wife was my music teacher at high school, for example, but at the time they were still engaged. So, the connection wasn't made. I can look back now and see the connection. So I've walked a journey, not just with him, but with his entire family at different stages. Here for my career at UWC, first of all, the recognition of universities as enabling infrastructure. We cannot do what we do without universities and with good leadership at universities. And even in that space, we are now in a time where universities, by law, by so many external factors, but also from within, are willing to look at capacitation for women. Let us as women respond with integrity. Don't jump on the bandwagon of capacitation for the sake of being a woman who, with capacity. Make it count. Because if we don't make it count, we lose that opportunity for generations to come. And that has to be our resounding almost concern. What are we leaving for those to follow us? Because we only need it for a short space and then we're catapulted to the next level. But what are we leaving behind? If we conduct ourselves as users and as opportunists and we don't think of the legacy, then we are creating a situation where funding will be withdrawn, where opportunities will not be endorsed because it hasn't returned a success. They've lost through the process. So I want to recognize the space of universities, and particularly the University of the Western Cape. I've been here all my professional life by choice. I was headhunted for PhD by industry. It was my choice to come to UWC because of establishing a legacy, wanting to return to our community, but also because the university itself is so unique in its culture. It's really a caring space for young people to discover, to thrive, to build healthy relationships. So capitalize on what works for you in your space. And yes, the knocks are not nice. Some of them leave lasting scars, but we as human beings, we are resilient. We can overcome so many things. So excellent mentorship I've mentioned, but even in my senior career, I don't know the road ahead. Others have no, have walked it and they know. So learn to develop the discerning skill, but also the wisdom to be patient, to be taught. Just because we are professors doesn't mean we know the answer to everything. So being willing to learn, being willing to be shaped, and then the wisdom to know when it is time to lead, when it is time to step out, when it is time to separate from negative influences. And that's not a line that anyone can draw for you. You draw that by your own moral compass, by your own choices, by your own experiences, and where you want to end up. So those are some of the things I think that have carried me. None of this means anything if we don't have the love and the fellowship of friends and family. So our first investment, and by investment, I want to say to the communities, I don't mean money because people associate success with money that has to come back. Huh? We lovingly and not so lovingly refer to it as black taxes, women taxes, all sorts of taxes, because there is this entitlement. But we need you to love us. We need you to connect with us as women. We need you to think that we are beautiful. We need you to think that we are kind and gentle, even when we are strong. We need you to respect us when we are strong. We're not trying to be bossy. We're not trying to dominate just because we are women. We are standing up because we believe in a purpose and we want to achieve something for someone else, taking people away. They call it sending down the elevator, but sending down the elevator is such a euphemistic term for me because it's hard work. To send down there. It's intentional. It is reliant on the recipients also reflecting and showing respect and showing support for the process. So it goes both ways almost 100% in the making of a successful woman or man for that reason. But we're focusing on women because traditionally we've associated that with males. But it's possible for both. And there's nothing like hard work to get you to the top. There's no quick fix.
Wow, Prof Baker, I could keep talking to you for another hour, but unfortunately, we've now run out of time. So, on that note, all of those profound wisdoms that you've shared, your personal learnings, your experiences, thank you so much for joining us and being part of Womanity. Really appreciated you being on the show today.
Thank you very much, Shamalaya. It was a privilege for me. I have, like I said, I've looked at your platform. I didn't know it before, I shall be honest and confess. But I shall be returning to the platform because I have seen some examples of excellence there. And just in glancing through the stories, I said to myself, you are now joining a space. Go and see what others have done before you. Let's learn from them. Let's not be so overcome with the moment that we forget that we are being given an opportunity. So it starts with an opportunity. And for me today, it ends with another opportunity to explore. And I thank you for that.
I think opportunity is going to be the key word as the takeaway for today.
Thank you so much.
You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity, and we have been talking to Professor Priscilla Baker from the Department of Chemistry and the Faculty of Natural Sciences of the University of Western Cape. She holds the Saatchi Chair, and she is the 2025 L'Oréal UNESCO Laureate for Africa and the Arab States.